work like a midnight shift shoveling waste at a steel mill could earn about $2.30 an hour. May not sound like a lot, but it's the equivalent of over $17 an hour today. These jobs are often filled by unskilled workers with high school diplomas or less, but they still paid well enough to cover the cost of an apartment and a car. Today, those same unskilled workers are often forced to work for corporate giants for minimum wage, $7.25 an hour, less than half what they would have been paid in the 1960s. Automation and outsourcing did eliminate many of the manufacturing jobs that previously paid decent wages, but it's a fact that workers have been unable to unionize that's really kept wages low in the service jobs that replaced manufacturing. In the 1950s, more than 35% of private sector jobs were unionized. Today, fewer than 6% of private sector workers belong to a union, and that number continues to decline. Those labor groups fought for higher wages, workers' rights, and employment regulations, including many of the protections that workers now take for granted. Today, the average employee has virtually no power against their employers, and the corporate masters are fighting hard to keep workers from standing together. That's why today's labor battles are so important. The fight for 15 isn't only about higher wages, it's about bringing back the middle class. For a real chance to make the American dream a possibility for all, we must fight for our labor unions so they can fight for us. In Screwed News, Australia is ringing in the new year with a heat wave. The record-breaking temperature reached almost 130 degrees Fahrenheit on Thursday, even hotter than 2013, which broke all previous records. This alarming heat wave hit that nation only a week before Australia's Bureau of Meteorology is expected to announce that 2013 was their hottest year on record. As Australians suffer in the oppressive heat, their government is acting as if the problem doesn't exist. Prime Minister Tony Abbott has given up on Australia's emission targets, done away with that nation's climate commission, and has even tried to repeal their cap-and-trade system. And Australia will continue producing as much as 40 million tons of coal each year, which will only worsen their climate problems. Australia must wake up to the dangers of climate change before people in that nation can't suffer through even higher temperatures. In the best of the rest of the news, a federal judge has rejected the mandatory drug testing of welfare recipients. U.S. District Judge Mary S. Scriven ruled against Florida's drug testing program, writing, "There is nothing inherent to the condition of being impoverished that supports the conclusion that there is a concrete danger that impoverished individuals are prone to drug use." In other words, there's no proof that someone's more likely to use drugs simply because they're poor. These programs have cost taxpayers much more than they promised to save, and they've been used as a way to discriminate against the poor. Thankfully, Judge Scriven issued a second ruling against Florida's drug testing program and reinforced a lower court decision that found the program unconstitutional. Florida may attempt to repeal this ruling, but for now, Judge Scriven has blocked that state from enforcing their discriminatory drug testing law. According to radcast.org, waves of radiation are increasing levels throughout our nation, and the heavy snowfall in some regions may be to blame. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, radiation levels are averaging 43 counts per minute with spikes of 71. In Charleston, West Virginia, is sitting at 43 with peaks of 60 counts per minute. Spearfish, South Dakota, is reporting levels of 56 counts per minute with spikes of 93. And Lakewood, Colorado, is hovering around 67 with highs up to 99 counts per minute. Chandler, Arizona, is averaging 46 counts a minute with spikes of 76. And Diablo Canyon, California, is sitting at 45 with highs of 70 counts per minute. Seattle, Washington, is hovering at 30 with spikes to 47 counts per minute. And Portland, Oregon, is sitting at 31 with spikes of 54. Radcast.org's alert level is 100 counts per minute, but they remind us that there is no such thing as a safe level of radiation. Senate Democrats want to fast-track unemployment benefits. According to the Guardian newspaper, Democratic leaders in the upper chamber are planning to introduce a three-month extension of long-term unemployment benefits. The aide explained, "This is not some abstract political issue. Congress doesn't do this and do it quickly, people will be choosing whether to pay rent or to be out on the streets. The trouble is, without much needed financial assistance, most people won't have any choice in that scenario. Hopefully, Senate Democrats can push through an extension quickly and start working on a long-term solution to unemployment, like making our government the employer of last resort." And finally, David Waddell, a councilman from Indian Trail, North Carolina, is giving up his town council seat. However, he didn't want to turn in any plain old resignation letter to Mayor Michael Alvarez. So Mr. Waddell turned in his letter on Thursday, written entirely in Klingon, the language of a race of Star Trek warriors. Councilman Waddell did include a translation for his letter and said it was part of an inside joke between him and the mayor. Apparently, Mayor Alvarez was not amused. He called the letter childish and unprofessional and said it's an embarrassment for Indian Trail and an embarrassment for North Carolina. Councilman said, folks don't know what to think of me half the time. I might as well have one last laugh. At least Mr. Waddell was original, and hopefully he will live long and prosper after his resignation. And that's the way it is today, Friday, January 3rd, 2014. I'm Tom Hartman on the news.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And it being Friday, and it being the first hour of our Friday program, it is, of course, time for Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Tom, it's good to be with you, and Happy New Year to you and all of the listeners.
Thank you, Bernie. It's our first conversation of the new year. Happy New Year to you, too. Thank you. So, I saw this agenda for 2014 that I got in the, I think it was in the Bernie Buzz, in the newsletter you sent out
yep.
earlier this week.
Yep.
That was quite impressive.
Well, thanks. What I wanted to do was kind of lay the groundwork for what I think should be an agenda for the coming year as Congress gets back to work, which reflects the needs of a struggling middle class and people living in poverty. And moves this country in a direction toward justice and addresses some of the very serious problems facing our country. You know, somebody told me a long time ago, Tom, it's not so much the answers that you give, it's the questions that you ask.
Hmm.
And I think that what happens in society today, and the corporate media is a major perpetrator of this, we very rarely ask the right questions. And I think we start focusing on real questions and start providing answers. We can move this country forward by rallying the American people to stand with working families and take on the big money interest. But I think the first point is the state of the economy. And I think, you know, we recognize, I do, that the economy today is a heck of a lot better than it was 5 years ago when we were losing 700,000 jobs a month. But if anyone thinks this economy today is anywhere near where it should be, for working families and for lower-income people, they are sorely mistaken. Real unemployment in this country today is not 7%. That would be too high. Real unemployment, though, is 13% if you include those people who have given up looking for work and those people who are working part-time when they want to work full-time. Right. And, by the way, most of the new jobs being created are, in fact, part-time and low-wage jobs. So if we are serious about turning this economy around and paying attention to the needs of working families, we have to focus on the economy. What we have to do is create millions of decent-paying jobs. And as you and I have discussed for a very long time, God only knows there is an enormous amount of work that needs to be done. You got a crumbling infrastructure out there, and that's roads and bridges and water systems, wastewater plants, and a rail system that is way behind the rest of the world, airports that need work. And when you do that, you can put a whole lot of people to work. And I can tell you, given the fact that the weather here in Vermont today is about 10 below zero, in my state and throughout this country, people are wasting enormous amounts of energy because their homes are not properly insulated, they're not weatherized, and we can save a huge amount of money in people's fuel bills, we can cut greenhouse gas emissions and combat global warming, and we can create jobs through a massive energy efficiency program. We can move and should move to sustainable energy, and we create jobs doing that. So there is more than enough work that needs to be done to make our country more productive, and we've got to start investing in those areas, in an education and a number of other areas. So that's one area that we're going to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Second area, and I want to make a point here, Tom, that is not made often enough. When people, in fact, stand together and get mobilized, they are very, very, very powerful. And I think often we don't fully appreciate that. But let me give you just one example. Over the last several years, in terms of Social Security and Medicare, we have seen a just huge onslaught of effort and hundreds of millions of dollars coming into the political process from these people who are saying, we have got to cut Social Security, we have got to cut Medicare, we have got to cut Medicaid. And you have people like Pete Peterson, who is a Wall Street billionaire who has spent literally hundreds of millions of dollars setting up organizations and putting pressure on Congress to do that. You had this Simpson-Bowles committee working on that. They wanted to do that. You had the President of the United States talking about a chain CPI for Social Security, which is a cut in the Social Security. All of that pressure. You had the whole Republican Party out there saying, we got to cut Social Security and Medicare. Well, you know what? Social Security and Medicare was not cut. Right. And you know why it was not cut, Tom?
Well, I think in large part because you were on that damn committee.
It was not cut because people all over the country said, no,
yeah,
you ain't going to do that. I was part of an effort with a number of progressive groups, which in a very short period of time brought forth 700,000 names on a petition saying, do not cut Social Security and Medicare. Now, yeah, I'm not saying that these guys are going to give up. I'm not saying that they're not going to be back, you know, next week and going to continue the fight. They want, that's what they believe. I mean, what our right-wing billionaires believe is, some of them, Koch brothers and others, that we should eliminate Social Security, make massive cuts in Medicaid, transform Medicare into a very different program than it is right now. So they're not going away. But I do want to tell all of the people out there, when folks stand up and when polls show that 60, 70, 75% of the people say, no, that's a pretty dumb idea, don't do that, you know what? Congress ends up listening. And we have got to work on that premise that on issue after issue, the American people are not as divided as some of the media pundits think that they are. When you ask the average American, and polls indicate this, should we invest heavily to create jobs in America? The American people say, yeah, we should. And when the American people are asked, do you think we should end these huge tax loopholes so that one out of four corporations in America doesn't pay a nickel in federal taxes? You know what the American people say? Yeah, we should. So I think on many, many issues of fair taxation, of job creation, of raising the minimum wage, of protecting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and other very important programs, the divisions in this country are not all that great. What ends up happening is the moneyed interests in Washington have a very, very different agenda. And their agenda is more tax breaks for the wealthy, maintaining and maybe expanding these tax loopholes for large corporations, cuts in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, Environmental Protection Agency, et cetera, et cetera. And that particular point of view represents maybe 20, 25% of the American people.
Yeah.
So what our job is to rally the American people around an agenda that makes sense for the middle class. And when we do that, we're going to give our Republican friends an offer they can't refuse. And that is if they choose to go forward on an agenda which represents 20, 25% of the American people, they're not going to stay in office.
And all the polls show that the people are with you. It's just all the money is on that side.
That is exactly the dynamic. Yeah. All of the polls and what the American people are saying is they understand the middle class is hurting, and they want to see efforts to expand the middle class and protect the vulnerable people in this country. That's what the American people say. What Wall Street and the big money interests are saying is, no, we want to pay. We're billionaires. Hey, I got $3 billion. That's not enough. I need more money. Cut my taxes. I don't care if you cut food stamps or you don't extend unemployment benefits for workers who are living hand-to-mouth. So there is a real split between what the American people want and what the Republican agenda is. What I am trying to do with other members of the Senate is to get the Democrats to be tougher, to be stronger, to raise that issue. I would be delighted, and I'll do my best, you know, to bring forth a vote on the Senate floor. If my Republican friends really want to cut Social Security, let them have a vote to do that.
Mm.
You know what? I think when, in the light of day, not too many of them are going to press that yes button.
Yeah, yeah. Put it on the record.
That's what I think the job is. I think we've got to focus on the economy. I think we've got to keep defending Social Security and Medicare. I think we have to take a very hard look at Wall Street, as I have said many, many times. When you have a situation where these banks that were bailed out because they were too big to fail are, without exception, in terms of the largest banks in this country, larger today than they were before we bailed them out, that makes no sense to me at all. And I think we've got to be thinking hard about breaking up these huge Wall Street banks.
There you go. Sounds like an agenda for 2014 to me. We will be back with your calls for Senator Bernie Sanders right after this in our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
By the way, be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. I mentioned his newsletter where I read the agenda. You can sign up for it. It's free. It's right over there at sanders.senate.gov. Senator Sanders is with us, and Russell in South Whitley, Indiana, watching us on the Dish Network on Free Speech TV, on TV, on Dish Satellite TV. You are on the air, Senator Sanders. Russell.
This is Russell Medley, and...
Yes, sir.
I'm from South Whitley, Indiana, and I've been watching your show, and there's one thing that bothers me, and that is the unemployment system that we have in this country is all wrong. The companies that supply the jobs gets taxed for the people that is laid off. It should be we're buying Chinese junk, and it should be that they should put a tax on everything and then pay back a bonus to every American job to the company that supplies an American job.
Are you talking about a tariff, import tariffs?
Well, no. Make it a sales tax for unemployment.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Bernie, well, thoughts on that, Bernie?
An issue. Tom and I have talked about it on a number of occasions. And that is that we have, and it has to be admitted, a bipartisan trade policy, which includes NAFTA and CAFTA and permanent normal trade relations with China. And now the administration is looking at a TPP, a Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. And in my view, and as somebody who has voted, Russell, against all of these trade agreements, I think they have been a disaster for American workers, and they have been... something that the multinational corporations have benefited very significantly from. And the bottom line is, this is not all that complicated. If you have the option of going to Vietnam or China and paying people very, very low wages and not have to worry about environmental considerations or unions and so forth and so on, or you stay in the United States and you pay people $15 or $20 an hour and you have to provide health care and protect the environment, it's not a very tough choice for many of these companies, and that's why they have shut down many, many manufacturing plants in this country and why white-collar jobs as well are going to low-wage countries. And I think it doesn't make sense, and that's why I voted against all of these trade agreements.
So what are your thoughts on ongoing unemployment benefits? How do you think this
is? Well, I believe my understanding is that next week when the Senate returns, extending unemployment benefits will be one of the very first issues that are up. I will be very, very supportive of that effort because it just seems to me that when long-term unemployment is almost at record levels, and that is that you have a lot of older workers out there who, for whatever reason, lost their jobs. Very, very difficult for them to find new jobs. And they're out there hurting. And unemployment benefits is a significant part of the income they receive. And you cut that off, those people are really going to be in really bad, bad shape. So I think it's unfair to really hurt these 1.3 million Americans. And that number is going to go up during the course of this year. And second of all, and economists have made this point. If these unemployed workers don't have a source of income, they're not going to be spending money. And if they're not spending money, the result is that I think it's something, a loss of about 160,000 jobs and about a 0.2% reduction in the GDP. So it's bad economics, and it's certainly very cruel policy to shut the door on the faces of these workers.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be back with more of your questions for Bernie right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And Bernie, you were just mentioning that when Congress comes back, you expect that probably the first thing Harry Reid is going to bring to the floor of the Senate will be renewing unemployment benefits. And I just had a quick question I wanted to ask you of that, if I may take a moderator's privilege here. I'm reading that they may ask for fast-track ability or privilege for that in order to, you know, let it go through quickly and without amendments and all that kind of thing. And this is the sort of thing everybody loves, so it might get granted. If they did pass fast-track authority as a separate piece of legislation and then used it for unemployment, would it still be there to be used for TPP? Is this a sneaky back way of getting fast-track ready for TPP?
Are you talking about using fast-track for extending unemployment benefits?
Correct.
I don't think it works that way, Tom. I think what you may be referring to is asking for unanimous consent.
Okay. Okay. So I'm...
Unanimous consent is the effort to expedite the process in a dysfunctional U.S. Senate.
Right.
Do I believe that the Republicans will give us unanimous consent to move this thing forward quickly? No, I doubt that very much.
Yeah. Okay. All
but
right.
Your other point about fast-track for TPP is something that some of us will vigorously oppose.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I don't know Senate procedures as well as you do. Thank you for setting me straight. Mark in Chico, California. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm a disabled Vietnam veteran, and I called about the TPP and this fast track, and you know, it's bad for the American people, and I believe it's 20 years today that NAFTA was passed, which destroyed our economy, too, besides the Reagan administration. And since Elizabeth Warren isn't running, are you willing to stick your neck out and go out there and put some ideas out for the people and run for president?
Well, let me just say two things. In terms of the TPP and trade policies, as I mentioned a moment ago, I agree with you. I was in the House of Representatives when NAFTA was voted upon. We worked as hard as we could with the unions and with a whole lot of people talking about how it was going to open up the floodgates for companies to ship jobs abroad. And I think history has proved that right. So we're going to do everything that we can to prevent the fast track for TPP. We're going to oppose it very, very strongly. The goal here is that corporate America has got to reinvest in a country called the United States of America, not in China, not in Vietnam, and start creating decent-paying jobs here. In terms of running for president, what I have said is that I think we are in a pivotal moment in American history, and decisions are going to be made now and in the very near future, which will determine whether, in fact, the middle class of this country survives. And there are issues that have to be raised, and there are solutions that have to be brought forward that represent working people. I do not wake up in the morning with some burning desire to become president of the United States. It is an impossibly difficult job. And so, you know, it's not something that I, feel that I have to do. But I do believe that somebody has got to raise these issues and has to fight for working families. And if there aren't other people coming forward who may be more qualified than I, or have better financial resources than I, then I would be prepared to do that. So the answer is, you know, I'm giving thought to it, but we have a long way to go before we have to make a decision on it.
Jeff in San Francisco, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator. My question's about student loans. My wife and I currently have about $75,000, $80,000 in student loans, but we don't qualify for one of those forms because we had them open prior to, I believe it was 2005. We opened them up in the 90s. Well, she got her PhD and I got my teaching credential and master's. So I was wondering if there's any way we can amend that to qualify for people who open them up earlier and still have this massive debt and are paying huge interest rates on them, if we could qualify and possibly we can amend that with the Republicans by limiting the amount you could have is up like $250,000. Because I believe currently you could have a large amount than that.
Well, Jeff, let me just say this. I'm a member of called the Health, Education, and Labor Committee, which is going to be looking at higher education reauthorization bill. And this is certainly an issue that is going to come up. And you've touched on, I think, one of the significant problems facing millions and millions of people. And that is, A, the high cost of college and the fact that many people like yourself and your wife are leaving school deeply in debt. They spend year after year after year paying off of those debts. In fact, I bumped into somebody in Vermont, my memory is correct, where the mother is still paying off her debts, and she's helping to pay off her kids' debt as well. And we now have, I think, student indebtedness, if you can believe it. There's more student indebtedness in this country than there is credit card indebtedness. So it is a huge problem, people paying very high interest rates. So very simply stated, Jeff, there are a lot of things that we can and must do to make sure that middle class and working class people are not forced to pay forever very high interest rates on their college loans. There are a number of ideas out there, and that is something that I will be fighting very hard to do. So it is not only, I mean, I can go on and on about what it does, but one of the other things that it does is that there are a lot of young people out there who are saying, you know what, I don't know if I want to go to college and come out $50,000 in debt or $100,000 in debt. So it is an issue that has to be dealt with, and I hope we'll deal with it shortly.
Well, we got about 30 seconds to the break. Any specifics you think might happen?
Well, I think what we have to do is, among other things, put a maximum interest rates for some people are much, much too high. Second of all, I think the federal government should not be making a profit on student loans. I think that that is wrong. So I think if we move forward in those directions, we can make some significant progress.
Sounds like a great start. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of your questions for Bernie right after this break. Be sure to check out his website. It's at sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for his newsletter, the Bernie Buzz, there. And it's also a great news aggregating site. A lot of good news and information you can find there. It is our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And Larry in Pulaski, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Bernie. I'm really concerned about the cost of living on Social Security. I appreciate it very much when you're talking that you talk to the people out here in TV land, because the people you're talking to there in that chamber, it does no good. If you just could talk to the people out here in TV land, use the Bill Clinton thing. Say, get your pencil out. It's easy to figure out. You people on Social Security, figure out what you're getting now on Social Security and when you went on it. Then they can do the math themselves, and that just eliminates a lot of chit-chat. If you could do that, please, just talk to the people out there in TV land, because them people across the other aisle is like talking to a commode. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, Larry, we do try to do that, and the reason we have such an active website, and that is sanders.senate.gov, and we do a Bernie Buzz, which I think provides a whole lot of good information, and why we try very hard, both in Vermont and around the country, to keep people informed about what's going on, is just for the reason that Larry indicated. I think the way we're going to make change in this country is when people know what's going on and put pressure on Washington and kind of make them an offer they can't refuse, and that is, if they don't do the right thing, they're not going to get returned to office. But in terms of Social Security, very, very briefly, the immediate good news, I think we have beaten back attacks to cut Social Security, which came from virtually every Republican and a lot of billionaire Wall Street guys and so forth. But the bad news, and where we have got to continue going forward, and this is, I've offered legislation on this for several years now, is that when some of my colleagues say that, well, gee, we have to reduce Social Security benefits and the cost of living adjustment, the truth is that, in my view at least, seniors are getting less than they should, because the spending habits and practices of seniors are different than the general population. Seniors spent most of their money on prescription drugs, on health care, on food, on keeping warm. And those costs are going up a lot faster than flat-screen TVs or computers or things that younger people might buy. So one of the many things we're trying to do is develop a separate index for seniors, which I think will reflect in them getting higher cost of living adjustments.
Lonnie in Baltimore, Maryland. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello.
Hello, Lonnie.
Hi. I have, first good evening to Mr. Bernie and you to Mr. Tom. I have two questions. As far as the college tuition, all the money that they make off these college athletes and everything, how come some of this money can't be put towards the tuition of the college students? And all these jobs that are being shipped out of the country, how come they can't be taxed when they try to ship the product back into the country so it'll balance it?
All right, well, Ronnie has asked two interesting questions. I think one of the issues that some of us are concerned about in terms of the quality of college education is that while tuition is going up and up and up, some of these colleges are investing not just in huge amounts of money in athletic programs and paying, unbelievable salaries to college football coaches and so forth and so on. They're investing in these very fancy and kind of four-star dormitory rooms and et cetera, rather than on focusing on how we give our young people the best education possible in a highly competitive world. So I think, Larry makes a good point about that, and maybe we should be investing more in teachers and curriculum and a little bit less in football stadiums and stuff. Second point is again, an issue that has come up on this show and comes up on virtually every show, and that is people understand, especially I think during the holiday season when people go out shopping and they find it harder and harder to buy products made in the United States of America. Everything is made in China, or it's made in Vietnam, or it's made in Bangladesh, or it's made, in countries all over the world where people are paid pennies an hour. And all of that is a result of our trade policies pushed by corporate America to make it easier for companies to shut down in this nation. And we've lost tens of thousands of factories in the last 10 years, millions of jobs. They go abroad and they bring their products back in. What Lonnie is talking about is a tariff. And that's something this country has had for a very long time until the trade agreements kind of wiped them out in many respects. So I agree with Lonnie.
Ross in Coos Bay, Oregon. Ross, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for listening to 1340 AM.
Thank you. Hello, Senator Sanders.
Hi, Ross.
And thank you for taking my call, Tom. I'm a big fan and big supporter of your show. It's my first time to call in. I'm a progressive that lives on the Oregon coast, and I work as a mental health provider for the local and state government. And we just found out recently that we're getting 3,000 more people on state Medicaid, and we're a very small local mental health clinic, and I'm actually really concerned about how we're going to absorb all these new patients.
Well, Ross, thank you very much for asking that very important question. I mean, the good news is that as a result of the Affordable Care Act, millions of people who previously were ineligible for Medicaid will get Medicaid. Other people will get affordable health insurance through their federal or statewide exchange, and that's all good news. But what that means is you're going to have a lot of folks out there who now have insurance, who have serious needs, whether it is physical, whether it is mental health needs, and they're going to be looking for providers. And today we are very, very weak as a nation in terms of primary health care and in terms of our capabilities regarding mental health, which what Ross is talking about. So I think Ross is expressing the concern. You're going to have a lot of people flocking into these facilities, and we're not going to have the capability or the infrastructure to deal with that. And I think in some parts of the country, he's right. Let me just tell you what I have done on this and will continue to do. As part of the Affordable Care Act, I fought very hard to get an $11 billion appropriation for the expansion of community health centers, which are in Oregon and in Vermont and all over this country. And they are a very important source of providing primary health care and mental health counseling and low-cost prescription drugs and dental care to people throughout this country. And as a result of what we did in the Affordable Care Act, hundreds and hundreds of new community health centers have been established all over America. We have got to do more. But Ross's point is that we need to improve our infrastructure in terms of delivery of mental health as well as primary care is absolutely right. So we made some progress, but we have a long way to go.
Edmund in Hot Springs National Park. I'm assuming
Happy
that's
New Year,
Georgia.
Gentlemen. I have a question. I think we all agree that we have two different kinds of economies in our country. But my question is, how can we expect to have a fair economy for everyone when we can't demand for fair justice system? I'm referring to branding Mr. Snowden as a traitor and asking for him to be accountable for what he's done. I am not privy to information whether or not he's a traitor or he's a whistleblower, but I know for a fact that Mr. Clapper perjured himself under oath in Congress, and we haven't demanded, and no one has asked anything about that and trying to do anything about it.
Well, some of us are trying to do something about it. I happen to believe that the NSA is an agency that is essentially out of control. I think that terrorism remains a serious issue. We have to do everything we can to protect the American people, but I believe very strongly we can do that under the Constitution of the United States. And I think what the NSA is doing is clearly unconstitutional. And some of us are going to work very hard to rein the NSA in. It's not just that virtually every telephone call is collected and on file, knowing who called who and at what time and where. It appears that the NSA is getting into people's emails, going into websites that people visit. And that, to my mind, is not what a free country is about. So I think you have this explosion in technology, which gives the government, and by the way, the private sector, the capability of doing all kinds of things that a few years ago nobody dreamed that they could. But just because they have the technology doesn't mean that they should be doing it. And I don't want everybody in America to be looking over their shoulders, whether it's the government or whether it is the private sector invading their privacy. This is a huge issue, and we have got to address it.
Do you think we just have 30 seconds, Bernie. Do you think the Congress will be addressing these Fourth Amendment issues coming up?
They will. There's no question, but they will. The question is how aggressively will they do that?
Yeah. And is your sense that Senator Reid's on with this or the Democrats are in general?
I think you have the Judiciary Committee doing a better job, I think, than the Intelligence Committee.
Mm-hmm.
But some of us feel very strongly that you can't give a blank check to the NSA and the other intelligence agencies to be able to collect all kinds of data in cases where 99.9% of the people have nothing to do with terrorism. That's just not what America is supposed to be about.
It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman program. You can check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov and sign up for his newsletter, his free newsletter. It's called The Bernie Buzz. Get all the information about what's going on in the world, and particularly here in Washington, D.C. right there.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And later on today, we'll have Anything Goes Friday, so stick around. Randy, in Smock, Pennsylvania, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Senator. I believe the Trans-Pacific is going to benefit no one but corporations. If the vote was held this week, how do you think the Senate would vote on that? And please define fast track. Thank you.
Okay. Randy asks what the vote would be in the Senate. Obviously, I don't know exactly what the vote would be, but if Randy is asking me, do I think it would carry in the Senate? Yeah, I do. All of the major trade agreements have carried in Congress, and I see no reason to believe why this one would not carry as well. You got all kinds of moneyed interest and corporate interest behind it, and when corporate America talks, the Senate usually listens. I can tell you absolutely, Randy, that there are a number of us who are very, very concerned about this legislation and will vote against it. Now, in terms of fast track, what fast track is about, interestingly enough, it is what the term implies. It is a means by which legislation can move very, very quickly through the Senate. The Senate, as I think most people know, is a very complicated institution, where if one person jumps up and say,
I object. I don't want to move this thing forward. You can slow it down interminably. And we see that every single day. The Republicans, in fact, have done more obstructionism in the last 5 years than any time in the history of this country. So it's very easy to slow down legislation and very easy to obstruct it. What a fast-track provision is, it says you can't do that. There aren't going to be any amendments. There'll be a time on it. We'll vote for fast-track, and then in X number of days or weeks, we're going to vote up or down what the bill will be. That's what fast-track is about. So it's an unusual mechanism to move a piece of legislation very, very rapidly, and that's what the proponents of TPP want to do. So that's something that I will very strongly oppose.
Okay, Mike, in Lewisburg, Missouri, I think, Mike, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. I think he might have already answered your question.
He has. Bernie, this is Mike Wilson. I'm 100% disabled Vietnam veteran, and I want you to run for president.
Well, thank you very much.
I have been watching you forever. My sister lives in Vermont. She shook your hand in a factory up there before, and we talk about you all the time.
Mike, we have just 30 seconds.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thanks very much for your service to our country. And I should tell you, by the way, as a Vietnam vet, that that what we are trying to do on the Veterans Committee, which I chair, is really take some very significant steps forward to protect veterans in this country. We've got some really good legislation that got through the committee, and now I've got to get it onto the floor and get it passed. But, Mike, thank you very much for your support and for your service to our country.
It's a good one. It's definitely a good one. We have 15 seconds before the break. Thought you want to share?
Well, again, the main point that I hope that everybody appreciates is that Congress is way out of touch with where the American people are. The American people understand the economic crises they face. They want us to work for them, and yet big money interests continue to win on issue after issue, and that's what we've got to change.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of Senator Sanders taking your calls right after this. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And Ron, watching us on the Internet on in Santa Maria, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, I think we all get caught up too often in talking about good jobs versus bad jobs. And I would challenge you to maybe go ahead and talk about the difference between a good job and a bad job. I think we all know many of the traits that are associated with a good job versus a bad job. Number one, pay. Number two, benefits. But what ends up happening by doing that is we devalue the, I don't know if you want to call them bad jobs, but that's what gets into our heads. They're bad jobs. Well, then who wants to do that? So today Rand Paul had talked about, we don't want to extend unemployment benefits because it gets people to, I don't know whether he thinks they'll become lazy or shiftless or whatever it is. Well, when you put, for many, the crappy job, let's just call it, or unemployment, they may very well take unemployment at that point. I think we need to make the bad jobs decent jobs, let's just call it. I'd love to hear your comment.
Well, Ron, one of the reasons, well, let me tell you what a bad job is. A bad job is a job that pays you a wage that at the end of the week, after working 40 hours for that week and after paying your rent and your car payments and your health care and everything else, you're worse off than you were before you started working. That's a bad job. A bad job is when your employer doesn't give you any sick leave. A bad job is when you have virtually no benefits at all. A bad job is when you have no protection on the job from being humiliated. I talked to a woman recently, and she said that, you know, she had no sick time or very little sick time, and in order to get off, she had to get a doctor's note, and by the time she got the note, she couldn't get an appointment with the doctor and all this other stuff. You know, the dignity on the job as well. So I think, you know, Ron makes a good point, and that is that what we want to do is take jobs which today are not good jobs and make them better jobs. And how do we do that? We do that by raising the minimum wage to a living wage. We do that by providing health care to all people and do what every other major country on earth is doing, have a national health care program. Then you do that, That's going to be there for every worker in America. You do that by creating an economy by which employers can provide other types of benefits. We are losing big time the defined retirement plans that made life so much better for so many people. So, you know, I think that's kind of the direction that we've got to go.
Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, Bernie, you're a swell guy, but I hope you don't run for president like Ralph Nader did and give the Republicans a chance to steal another election. But anyway, my question is, George Bush Sr. administration wrote NAFTA, and President Clinton, I understand, added protections for American jobs and the environment. And after he signed it, 22 million jobs were created, and wages rose during the Clinton administration. So why did NAFTA cost us jobs after Bush became president?
Well, Paul, first of all, it's not my intention to do anything if I decide to run for president that would make it easier for a Republican to win. So rest assured about that. I'm not sure in terms of NAFTA and jobs, it's almost humorous how the analyses are done. But the bottom line is, Paul, it is my very strong opinion based on fact that NAFTA has cost us a significant number of jobs. And it's not just a question of Clinton versus Bush. It is a question of what these trade agreements have done under all administrations. We have seen in industry after industry a significant loss of factories and manufacturing jobs. And I think that these trade agreements have worked very much to the detriment of the average American. They are pushed by corporate America. They benefit corporate America, and that's why they were passed, and that's why they're still fighting for even more.
Detroit Johnny O in Romulus, Michigan. We got about 2 minutes before the end of the hour. Quick one, Johnny.
Great, Tom. Yeah, a real good friend of mine. He works as an ADT security. Installing alarms during the day, and he's a musician by night. So I'm 55, one of my best friends. He made a statement the other day that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. What is this guy talking about? Is he nuts? He's a Rand Paul supporter, too, by the way.
Well, you know, what bothers me, Johnny, is there are a lot of working people who watch too much Fox and listen to too much Rush and just get their facts very, very wrong. Social Security today has a $2.7 trillion surplus and can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 20 years. Social Security for 70-plus years, ever since it was established, and this is just an extraordinary record, has paid out every nickel owed to every eligible American, without exception, in bad times economically and in good times. Does Social Security sound like a Ponzi scheme to you? Some of the right-wing guys come up and they say, Social Security, that $2.7 trillion, is all IOUs. All that they mean by that absurd remark is that what Social Security does, as they should, is they invest that money in treasury bonds. And they gain interest on that, which adds to the Social Security surplus. But for some of these people, they assume that when you own a treasury bond, and by the way, the United States government has never failed to pay its debt ever, they think that this is some kind of bogus fund and that this money is not real. That is nonsense. Social Security is strong and will continue to be strong, and with very modest changes, we can make it strong for the next 70 or 75 years. What you should be aware of, Johnny, and what your friends should be aware of, these folks who are bad-mouthing Social Security, they want to privatize Social Security, they want to end Medicare as we know it, they want to make massive cuts in Medicaid, they want to do away with the EPA and the Department of Energy. These people have a real right-wing agenda, and it is funded by billionaires. Now, it doesn't upset me that billionaires believe that. You know, they want to pay less of taxes. It does upset me that any working person in this country who needs Social Security and Medicare would believe that stuff for one moment.
Bernie, thanks so much for being with us this week.
My pleasure. And again, Happy New Year to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Sanders. And be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
And now the day's top headlines from Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, followed by the locally produced KBOO Evening News. On tonight's news, we'll hear about the second of a three planned megaload shipment of oil extraction equipment through Oregon tribal land, a possible strike this Monday by Portland school teachers, and a picket going on right now outside the Fulbon supermarket on Southwest 82nd Avenue in Portland. All that and more beginning at 5 p.m. Stay tuned.
Sunni militants laid siege to two key cities in western Iraq Thursday, liberating prisoners, occupying buildings, and setting police stations on fire. The Iraqi military has pushed back with airstrikes. Iraq is embroiled in a sectarian crisis fueled by the civil war in neighboring Syria. The recent attacks took place in Anbar province, the site of the 2007 surge of U.S. troops, and an area where nearly a third of U.S. war casualties lost their lives. More than 7,800 Iraqi civilians died last year, a return to levels seen during the height of the U.S. occupation. The United Nations is warning a spiraling crisis in the Central African Republic, also South Sudan and Syria. They're testing the limits of the global humanitarian system, the UN says. UN Humanitarian Chief Valerie Amos said more than one in six Central Africans are now internally displaced due to the violence there. In South Sudan, nearly 200,000 people have been driven from their homes in recent weeks. Amos said the global picture has worsened since last month, when she projected a record $12.9 billion would be needed to reach people in more than 50 countries.
Developments in the Central African Republic and South Sudan have already added tens of thousands of people to the list of those who need our help and support. And with the ongoing emergencies in Syria, the Philippines, and elsewhere, our collective response capacity and our resources are being stretched to the limit. Millions of people have begun this year internally displaced or as refugees, dependent on humanitarian organizations for a place to sleep, food to eat, and for basic health care.
UNICEF, meanwhile, is warning attacks against children have reached unprecedented levels in the Central African Republic, with 16 confirmed killed, at least two of them beheaded. Children are being recruited into armed groups and targeted in brutal revenge attacks. The military in South Sudan says rebels are forcibly recruiting civilians in a bid to seize the capital of Juba, even as peace talks open in Ethiopia. The rebels already control the strategic city of Bor, the capital of the oil-producing Jonglei state. The United States has been evacuating staff from the embassy in Juba amidst continuing fears of a full-blown civil war. In Lebanon, a powerful car bomb hit a neighborhood south of the capital, Beirut, Thursday, killing at least five people. The area is a stronghold of Shiite group Hezbollah. The United States is continuing to pressure Afghanistan to sign a deal keeping thousands of U.S. troops there beyond this year. On Thursday, a group of U.S. senators met with Afghan President Hamid Karzai to urge him to stop delaying the bilateral security agreement. Republican Senator John McCain said they had made progress.
That as a result of our long meeting with President Karzai, we have narrowed those differences, and I believe that we can look forward to the signing of the BSA and an implementation of it sooner rather than later.
The United States is also pressuring Afghanistan not to release a group of 88 prisoners from Bagram, the prison north of Kabul that became known for the abuse of prisoners under U.S. control. Afghanistan has already released 562 prisoners and plans to release the others, saying there's not enough evidence to keep detaining them. But the United States says the prisoners were involved in killing U.S. troops and Afghan civilians. In Cambodia, police opened fire on striking garment workers south of the capital today, killing at least three people. Witnesses said police armed with assault rifles shot at protesters hurling rocks and other projectiles. Workers have launched a week-long strike demanding a minimum wage of $160 a month, which is double the current rate. Rwanda's former spy chief has been found murdered in South Africa. Patrick Karegeya had fled to South Africa in 2007 after being accused of plotting a coup against Rwandan President Paul Kagame. His body was found on a bed in an upscale hotel in Johannesburg on Wednesday. Rwanda's opposition party has accused President Kagame of ordering his death. The United States has transferred the last three Chinese Uyghur prisoners from Guantanamo to Slovakia 5 years after a judge ruled their detention was unlawful. The Uyghurs are members of a Muslim minority that faces persecution in China. They'd been held for more than a decade without any evidence of ties to terror groups. 19 other Uyghur prisoners previously held at Guantanamo have already been resettled in five other countries. On Thursday, State Department Deputy Spokesperson Marie Harf hailed the transfers as part of a push to close Guantanamo.
The U.S. government long ago determined that it did not seek to detain these individuals, the Uyghurs, as enemy combatants. And in 2008, these latest ones that were released were among 17 Uyghur detainees ordered released from Guantanamo by a U.S. federal court. We've long maintained our position that we will not repatriate Uyghurs to China from Guantanamo due to our humane treatment policies. As we've also said, we're taking all possible steps to reduce the detainee population at Guantanamo Bay. And it is certainly our position that these latest transfers mark an important step in furthering that objective.
Eight other prisoners have been removed from Guantanamo since August, but 155 still remain. A major snowstorm is blasting the Midwestern and Northeastern United States, prompting flight cancellations and school closings. Nearly 2 feet of snow had fallen north of Boston as of early this morning, with up to 7 inches here in New York City. New York and New Jersey declared states of emergency, advising residents to remain indoors. Secretary of State John Kerry has returned to the Middle East in a bid to revive peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians. On the day of Kerry's arrival, the Israeli Interior Minister and a group of lawmakers attended a ceremony marking construction of new settlement homes in the West Bank's Jordan Valley. All settlements in the West Bank are considered illegal under international law, and Palestinians have warned they could derail the talks. Kerry's visit comes as former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is near death. Sharon has been in a coma for years, but says his condition, but doctors say his condition has declined. In India, hundreds of people took to the streets to protest the death of a 16-year-old rape victim who was set on fire. The victim was gang-raped in October. The next day, she was gang-raped again while returning from the police station after reporting the crime. Her family said they face constant harassment from the rapists. Last week, the victim, who was pregnant, was set on fire, reportedly by two of her attackers. She died this week after identifying the men. At a protest on Thursday, a lawmaker blamed authorities in the state of West Bengal.
I stress that the government is answerable for the girl who would have been present among us today if the West Bengal administration had exercised the laws properly. We do not seek anything else. But where is the law? A girl was gang raped twice, and still you are unable to punish the accused? Why?
The young woman's death came 2 days after the first anniversary of the death of another woman who was gang raped on a New Delhi bus. That case ignited the country and drew attention to sexual violence around the world. In Pennsylvania, a high-ranking Catholic official convicted in a landmark child sex abuse case has been released on bail after his conviction was overturned. Monsignor William Lynn was found guilty in 2012 of hiding child molestation by transferring predatory priests to unsuspecting congregations. An appeals court threw out his conviction last week, saying he was tried under a law that did not apply to him. Lynn was released on Thursday after 18 months in prison. Prosecutors are appealing. In a victory for immigrant rights, California's highest court has ruled an undocumented man can become a lawyer. In a unanimous decision, the court ruled law school graduate Sergio Garcia can practice law. Garcia still cannot be legally hired by an employer, but he says he plans to open his own law firm. In New York City, William Bratton has been publicly sworn in as the commissioner of the New York City Police Department. He returns to the job after heading the NYPD in the mid-1990s when he embraced the controversial broken window strategy of cracking down on low-level offenses. Bratton was appointed by new mayor Bill de Blasio, who has vowed to curb the police practice of stop and frisk, a tactic Bratton actually expanded while heading the Los Angeles police. On Thursday, Bratton said he would ensure stops are performed constitutionally.
The mayor has made it quite clear, and I'm reinforcing that, that the concerns about a progressive mayor coming in, that basically reining in the police, He has made it quite clear that his concerns are around the issue stop, question, frisk, and that in all things we want to do it constitutionally. You're going to hear this ad nauseum from me, constitutionally, respectfully, compassionately, because that's what it's all about.
In August, a federal judge ruled stop and frisk was unconstitutional and ordered reforms, saying police had relied on a policy of indirect racial profiling. De Blasio has said he will drop the city's appeal of that ruling.
Tune in to Plugged In every first and third Fridays from 10 p.m. to midnight with host DJ Tronic. Tronic does a live mix in the studio featuring the latest in house, techno, tech house, breaks, dubstep, and more. Tronic also has guest DJs in the studio and often talks about upcoming parties, club nights, and more. That's Plugged In every first and third Fridays at 10 p.m. only on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:02 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland students gear up for a possible district-wide strike by Portland teachers.
Over $1 million was spent on marijuana on the first day of its legalization in Colorado.
Peace talks began today between government and rebel groups in South Sudan. Violence continues to plague the countryside.